You're listening to the Isoca Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton. On today's episode of the podcast, I'm speaking with security experts Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs to discuss physical security. To get us started, can you tell our listeners why we're talking about physical security today?
So Dustin and I were talking about a lot of things we had happened to be seeing throughout our day-to-day recently, and that kind of led into the importance of physical security. One of the things we noticed is that it can be something that is taken for granted or an assumed that is not necessarily always the case. Most recently, when we saw the insurgency attempt here in the U.S., there are a great deal of physical security mechanisms that either weren't there or failed completely. And it's weird, right? Because in the field of cybersecurity, you're always thinking about when you think about defense in depth and so forth, you're thinking about the networks, you're thinking about the devices as far as like connectivity and so forth. You're concerned about insider threat, which is always a good concern, right? But like DLP, for example, and are your filters up to date and how often is your patch management being run, et cetera. But one of the assumed, and there can also be, in, at least in my experience, a great kind of stovepiping between that level of technical and cyber-specific security and the physical security, which is a key component of cybersecurity, wouldn't you say, Dustin?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we can separate this into two different portions, which Frank kind of already did for us, but one's the logical side of cybersecurity and controls, right? So we have these logical controls that are kind of always there and always on our mind, and we have all these great devices that help with that. On the flip side of that, then we have the physical side of computing, right? And, you know, we tend to boil it down to something as simple as asset management or talking points, just hardware security. There's so much more to it. And like we saw, you know, during the failed insurrection attempt at the Capitol building in the United States recently, it boils down to unauthorized people in sensitive areas, right? That's part of it. There is this other part of it, though, that, you know, it's kind of the lesser known of the physical security, which is proximal security as well. We have Wi-Fi now. We have cellular networks now. We have these data avenues and these accesses that you don't technically need to be inside the building, but you need to be close to it. And so we've talked about that somewhat in our podcast on Wi-Fi. But now kind of speaking about the physical side of the house, it's something that, like Frank said, we kind of take for granted. And we kind of sometimes we push that off on our physical security department, if we have one, if we're lucky enough to have one, right? Like if we have a building within our enterprises or, you know, whatever we have, we kind of are like, all right, well, you know, there's a gate. So that's, you know, there we go. There's physical, there we got physical control on, you know, on our assets. And it's like, well, you know, it's a little bit more entailed than that. Even if a terminal is locked, it can be unlocked. Even if you have peripherals disabled, they can be re-enabled. There are all kinds of different things that can happen when somebody who is not supposed to be in an area or a nefarious actor is able to gain physical access to a device, a node on a network, to an actual router or a switch, or some kind of physical hardware device. It's kind of that last line that we all kind of think about at the end of the day. It's a big part, though. Frank, you know, we've done a lot of stuff. We've done pen testing before. The other side of this as well is not only just gaining physical access to a device, but also gaining access to a room or, again, proximal access, where then you can have a leave-behind device, mm-hmm. So another device that's on a network that isn't supposed to be there. So we've talked a little bit about Raspberry Pis on this podcast.
Yeah, well, I was so excited. I was ready for the Raspberry Pi to come.
All the uses for that. There are all kinds of key computers or USB-sized computers that can be plugged in. And again, leave-behind devices. Those are something that, again, after the Capitol thing happened, they had to kind of go through and scan the building to make sure that there were no, not only physical security leave-behind devices such as IEDs or something super dangerous like that, but also electronic listening devices and other devices on the network.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because depending on the organization, and it comes down to organizational setup, you can have amazing physical security in one place when it comes to these assets and just completely terrible implementations, and it'll be the same organization. And I think there's a lot to discuss there because of the attitude of physical security. When you have certain policies and procedures that should be followed, at the end of the day, it's only going to come down to the people who are responsible for following them and implementing them. Case in point. Dustin and I used to work for the Department of Defense. I remember at one point there were, to get to my desk at a specific location, I had 5 layers of physical security before I could even sit at my desk. And if we're counting, you know, typing keyboards in the past, I guess that's another, but I'm not counting that, right? That same organization in another location taught me, I learned about the phrase, it's called pocket skiff, right? which for those of you who aren't aware, a skiff is a secure compartmented information facility. And the whole idea is it's like a vault within in a lot of ways. It's a vault within a vault kind of thing where, you know, data, you can look at classified information and stuff like that. And it's really, you know, very heavily monitored and so forth. But this other place, to get information from one building to another building, that one skiff to another skiff, individuals would put their thumb drives, apparently. They would put data on a thumb drive, put it in their pocket, walk out the door, and then walk it to another location. And, you know, people would say, how'd you get that data here so quick? And they'd be like, oh, pocket skiff. It's like, what? What? No, there's no pocket skiff.
This was not authorized, by the way. None of this.
Yeah, no, not authorized. I got in a great deal of trouble, right? But, you know, it's the attitude and the mentality of, this was the same organization, right? And it had the same policies and procedures and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's like, you still have to make sure that people are aware, people will follow it and so forth. So another example, when the insurgency folks were inside the Capitol, someone forgot to lock their laptop. and you saw pictures of members of Congress, their computers and systems open and unlocked. And as you saw in the news recently, one individual even grabbed a whole laptop and took it right with them, right? And tried to sell it. So, I mean, physical security can easily fall to the wayside and into the back of the mind of people when it's assumed in that regard.
Absolutely. And let's dial it back a little bit, because we are jumping into a very specific subset of information security, specifically when it comes to the United States Department of Defense and the legislative branches of the United States government. For an enterprise, you might not need 5 layers of physical security. Your organization obviously is going to be a little bit different, right? And it really depends. Like, there are some organizations out there who that have trade secrets that they protected for over 100 years. I'm thinking specifically of Coca-Cola, right? They have that recipe. It's locked down. I don't know where it is. I don't know how many layers of physical security they have. I don't even know if they have it digitized. That's actually an interesting question. They might just still have it.
They don't even have it patented, I learned the other day. They haven't even patented it, because they had to patent it, then they'd have to tell you what's in it.
That's right. Yep. So it's a trade secret, right? So, and of course, there are other examples of trade secrets, and you know, there are, you know, what we refer to in the industry, the technical term is special sauce that goes into some of our products, right? The secret sauce that goes into some of our products to make them work. But as far as physical security goes, again, it's the same as any kind of portion of cybersecurity or the defense in depth system that you're looking at, where it needs to be tailored to you. It needs to be tailored to your corporation or to your enterprise. And it's great to talk about, like, okay, this is NSA level protection, or this is DOD level protection. And it's good to look at those as examples, but obviously tailoring them to what you need and making sure that, you know, it's in policy and that the people in your company are following it. Now, this also then goes into what we talk about a lot on this podcast, and what I'm sure everybody's heard of, is creating a culture of cybersecurity. And making sure that not only that your people are adhering to that, but that they're making sure that other people are adhering to it and holding people accountable for adhering to it. And then, you know, learning from their mistakes. And that's kind of what it's all about. Along with this, you know, there is the proximal access side of the house that we've talked about. During penetration tests, we would do things like candy drops, which is basically where you take USB drives that have an HID attack or some kind of program in there, that when a user plugs it into their computer, it will run a specific script or try to call out to a server that we could then implant something on there to monitor what was going on or to escalate our privileges within the network. And we would do that on the outside, like the employee entrances were a great place to do candy drops. And, you know, that's another aspect of physical security. So, you know, we've already talked about a nefarious actor, a witting nefarious actor, but there are also unwitting actors on our network all the time. And we've talked about the human factor being the weakest link, if you will, within any network. And for physical security, it's the same way. You know, we have tailgaters that somebody, you know, we're all human. We all try to be polite. And when somebody tries, you know, we'll try to hold a door for somebody, even entering an area where you might need an access card to get in there, but we'll still hold a door if it looks like they're supposed to be there. So there's all these aspects that go into physical security that also tie into cybersecurity. And that's one of the things I think that separates it really from just saying information security. And I'm not saying that information security doesn't include physical security. I think there is those overlapping features. Frank, what do you think?
At one point in our career, Justin and I, before we did all this wonderful Isaka stuff and so forth, as we were doing cybersecurity out in the wild, right? We worked at a lot of different locations and a lot of different sites. And one of these sites, and regardless of where we worked, there are always tons of physical security rules, right? And the big one is you don't hold the door open. You don't hold the door open for people. Everyone badges in, closes the door behind them, and then the next person badges in and closes the door behind them, and then so forth and so on. Well, at one location we were at, Dustin and I were visiting this location, and we were going into a meeting, and it was within a specific area. And as we're going up to the door, the person in front of us swiped their badge and then held the door open for us. We both kind of looked at him. I was like, no. He says, well, he's like, come on, you're coming in, right? I was like, yes. He goes, well, just come on in. No. And they were uncomfortably insistent to the point where I was just like, close the door. Close it, please. And they closed it. And, you know, Dustin's with me. He knows I can get a little frazzled about cybersecurity. So I badged in, and then I waited for Dustin to badge in. I badged in, closed door. Dustin badged in, closed door. We went in, and I said, who are we talking to? And then we found him. And I started off the meeting in absurd fashion. I just said, okay, who's this jerk over here? Who's that fellow? And they're like, what do you want? Why? Why do you care? I was like, he would not close the door. He tried to hold it open for us. And they go, that's just Ed. He's weird. Come to find out, that's one of the biggest physical security violators in the history of man, Edward Snowden. Yeah. Yeah. Physical security is important. Just ask Edward Snowden. There you go. That's my best example of physical security and its abuse I have.
In all honesty, that's kind of what we need within cybersecurity. And we need to make sure that our employees are doing the same thing, right? We need to make sure that our employees are taking it just as seriously as us cybersecurity experts. They don't have to know the nuances, and we don't have to, you know, ingrain in them what exactly might happen if they do allow someone to walk in at to tailgate or plug in a unauthorized USB device into their terminal. We just need to let them know that it's bad. If they're curious, of course, we can answer those questions. But I think, you know, that again, building the culture of cybersecurity, that's really what we're talking about here. And it starts with physical security, really, because every day that's our biggest ingress and egress, right? Of possible data, of possible assets, of whatever you want to call it. It's the people walking in and out of the building that are going to be the biggest risk for us. And again, they're employees. Hopefully, for the most part, they're employees. There's not a whole lot of people trying to, hopefully, you know, the Capitol building incident doesn't happen at your enterprise on a daily basis or even a century basis. So hopefully, you know, that's not happening every day, but it is a good idea to, I think the Capitol building thought that would never happen, right? The security of the Capitol building probably were like, that'll never happen. And it did, you know, and that's, of course, the level of risk is lowered because it's not likely to happen, but it did happen. And thinking about your enterprise and your physical assets in that way and making sure that you're, you know, paying attention to your policies that are in place and how closely your employees are adhering to those policies, that's a very important part of cybersecurity. And also, it's kind of a fun thing to test. Being a pen tester, one of my favorite things to do, and this might just sound really weird to some people, but one of my favorite things to do was to like dress like a UPS person, dress like an executive, dress like whatever I needed to dress like to try to get access to wherever I was trying to go. If you have flowers, you have flowers and you look like you're a delivery guy, that's really good, actually. That usually got you in at most places. And for the most part, if you had a suit and tie and you look clean shave, you look like you belong in corporate America, right? So,
especially for holding a clipboard.
Yes, holding a clipboard helps. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's still ways around all of that. There are, even if your employee stops somebody or, you know, stopped me during that whole thing, I would usually have some kind of badge that I had manufactured. It wasn't necessarily a very good representation of what a badge should look like for that particular area, but it usually was able to get me out of trouble if I really needed it. But again, it was fun for me. I enjoyed doing it. And it's one of those things that it keeps everybody sharpened. Let's put it that way.
So on the subject of unconventional threats, such as Dustin in a fake mustache, can you, I got a news item this morning about the risk of Joe Biden's Peloton in the White House. In our last couple minutes, do you have anything you want to say about that?
And I think this is an interesting, Abby, that's like an amazing segue into how really you can have like a proximal access issue. So I don't know what exactly is on a Peloton device other than it's a tablet. It's probably run by Android or some kind of form of Linux. So it's like an IoT device. Now, and I'm sure he'll eventually be able to bring it in once it's vetted. I think it would have to be one of those things that's vetted and up, made sure that it's updated and all that other stuff. He might actually eventually be able to bring his Peloton bike in. But that's one of those things where it's you can have a device that is, you know, a respected device or a device that is trusted by a lot of people in their home use. But when it comes to like national security, you know what? Maybe just leave the Peloton at home because we don't know exactly what's going on with it on the back end, right? Now we talk about trade secrets and we talk about patents and all that other stuff. You know, Peloton probably has, they might have software on there that is incredibly proprietary and kind of their secret sauce, right? Where they have like, here's how we calculate how many calories you burn, or here's how we calculate this. So they might have some different things in there that if the president of the United States wanted to have that in the White House, they could be like, well, we can't just hand over our source code to you, but we'll let you run as many tests on it as you can. So vetting devices, that's a good point. And Isoca, we do the same thing. When you come into our offices in Schaumburg, Illinois, you used to be able to, it was a BYOD, you could bring in your own computer and you can connect to our corporate network. They put the kibosh on that a few years ago, which is, again, good cybersecurity policy for sure. And they set up a guest network, but you have to have a vetted device with an Isoca. Now, I don't know how deeply that vetting goes. I don't know how our IT department, our cybersecurity departments at Isoca, I don't know how deeply they investigate a particular device or software before they allow it to be installed or even come onto the premise. But they do have those protections in place. Again, moving on to Joe Biden's Peloton, it's the same idea, right? They need to vet that device before they allow it into secured spaces, because like Frank said, there are secured information spaces within, of course, all DoD facilities, but specifically in the White House as well. Frank, what do you think?
There's also a lot of third-party concerns there too, because I'm thinking about, I am an avid Nike Running Club app user, right? I've got, oh man, over 8,000 miles logged on it. It doesn't just connect to Nike's database, right? I've got several integrations in there. It talks to my MyFitnessPal. It talks to my Apple Health and so forth. So there's a lot of areas for potential, you know, exploitation. That is a concern that, you know, with a Peloton.
And you brought up another good subject too there, which is supply chain, something that we've all been hearing a lot about lately, supply chain, especially with the SolarWinds attack, right? So where are Pelotons made? I don't know. Some of the components are definitely not made in the US. So, you know, then that comes down to, okay, well, where was it made? What kind of code can be run on it? What kind of code is pre-installed on it? All that stuff. So that's what, when we talk about vetting, that's really what we're talking about, is making sure that they do a thorough job on testing and making sure that there's not data, like Frank said, either third party or other, that's being leaked and going out. Now, also with that, there's the president's HIPAA concerns as well, because I'm sure it records your heart rate, I would think it would. It would record, you know, how good you were feeling that day. There's a lot of health information that's probably being sent back and forth as well. Not just because he is the president, but also because he's an American citizen. His health information is protected under HIPAA, if it's identifiable, of course.
Thanks, Dustin. And thank you, Frank. That's all the time we have for this episode of the podcast. To make sure you never miss an episode of the Cyber Pros Exchange series, subscribe to the podcast today.